Welcome to Local Matters. I'm Louis Matheny, and I'm in the studio today with Billy Mack. Billy Mack, I've known for a very short period of time, but has been a great influence in teaching me about talk radio. In all my years in radio, I didn't do talk radio. I was a DJ who was required to fill airtime. And in the case of talk radio, I'm learning to talk less and listen more. And up until a month or so ago or more, somewhere just prior to COVID-19 sort of locking us all indoors, I had been invited by a friend to a local bar where she said there was this great band on stage playing. And as I walked in, I looked at the name of the band on the window, whose name was Billy Mack, and thought, well, that's interesting. They have the same name as the guy I know to be the DJ and producer at the radio station where I'm doing this talk show. And it wasn't until 30 minutes into being in there that I realized the person upon stage I kept glancing at vaguely resembled the guy that I worked with here at the radio station. And it's Billy Mack, the musician. So I discovered this whole side of Billy Mack. And then I explored and found Billy in a YouTube video with his wife, Cherie, I think on a rooftop in Nashville. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Alan Jackson's Good Time Bar on Broadway in Nashville. I've been playing there for about a year and a half now.
Okay.
It's quite the release of coolness, I guess, because it's just a very intimate setting where people are sitting around tables on the rooftop and historic Nashville. I can see the Ryman every night where it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I got that feel for it and recognized that it was Nashville, and I've been on a few rooftops there, but not that one. Now I have a reason to go, assuming that you're going to be playing there on a regular basis.
Once we get back to normal, hopefully that'll happen again.
Yeah. So you are also one of the many musicians who has taken to the camera, if you will, rather than the stage to perform as a musician. And how are you finding that working out for you?
It expands to more of an audience that doesn't really frequent bars, go to the restaurants that happen to have a bar. You know, it opens it up more to people who are at home and are just cruising through social media that may have never been to a live show on Cookeville's West Side, which is an amazing live music scene.
There are
musicians all throughout the Upper Cumberland that blow my mind. Lucas McCoy, the Smoky Knights, gosh, there's so many. Seth Willoughby, Travis Copeland, just to name a few of the artists that are amazing, that you're sitting there listening to them going, why are they not on the radio? Why do they not have a tour bus in their name and lights? So we have a very, very unique area.
We do. I agree.
Throughout the Upper Cumberland where you can catch great live music several nights of the week.
Right.
But getting back to your question, since we can't do that right now, our new normal is to take our show to our social media pages and hopefully to introduce a wider base, which it has done for me, because I've gotten folks that are listening in Hawaii now, that are listening in Oregon, Washington State. And it's kind of cool to get to and have a couple of ladies that live in England that are trying to get me to come play at a pub there. So it's a cool new experience.
Yeah. Well, it's in many ways, you know, the promise of social media and the internet faded away years ago, and in its place it became something that a lot of us don't find altogether healthy and enjoyable anymore, and but I think a lot of people are addicted to. So when we stumble across someone like you playing music live, as I mentioned to you the night that you were having a Facebook Live event, I just, you know, got my computer hooked up to my big 65 inch and got my sound system going and sat back, and it was like being under the Jumbotron at a concert. And it was arguably one of the best experiences in live music that I had seen in a while. You know, as far as concerts go, it was right there in my living room.
I appreciate
it. And when it wasn't even pay-per-view, and you were, you know, suggesting tips if people wanted to, and I felt very strongly inclined to tip, because it was cheaper than a night on the town paying a cover charge for dinner and drinks. And I don't drink booze anymore. So it was just, I'm in my own bar. So it's sort of altering our realities in ways that I hadn't anticipated. And I hope that after COVID-19 has passed, you know, we're seeing the best and the worst in human behavior ever, you know. And I think it's an opportunity for a lot of businesses and artists especially to market themselves in a different way.
Absolutely. I think you have to evolve, as is with anything, with business, with life, with anything. You have to evolve if you want to maintain the flow,
yeah,
so to speak. And as an artist, you always have to be evolving because everyone else is. There's 12-year-olds that are influencers on things like TikTok and YouTube. There's a little 8-year-old boy that made $42 million last year for reviewing toys.
I had no idea. That's amazing.
It's just mind-blowing that the internet, as you pointed out, can be a cesspool and a terrible thing.
Yeah.
But it can also be a platform where someone with a message, whether it be spoken, sung, performed, or various other things, they can get out and deliver that message in one place,
right,
to a mass audience.
Yeah,
and that can be good or that can be bad.
Yeah, it's just a really a matter of everybody getting out of the box and thinking out of the box. And we were all trapped in the box by COVID-19. Locally in Cookeville, we were hit by this tornado, which did something quite terrible and set the community back in a way that other towns might not have bounced back from. But because we are community-minded, I've seen it coming together in a place that like no other. There's just something unique about this town that draws people and keeps people like you and me here. I mean, I haven't lived here for years, but I'm now making this my primary home and actually gave up New York City in order to have a home here. So I'm in the studio with Billy Mack. I'm going to say Billy Mack, the musician, since this is sort of a new aspect of his personality. And for you, for example, I guess the question always arises, how did you get started? Did somebody give you a guitar? Did you hear a song? Were you singing along? What got you going as a musician?
Garth Brooks.
Garth Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
When his very first album came out, the Dance was one of the best written songs that I've ever heard in my entire life, because you are sitting there listening to every word. I could have missed the pain, but I'd have had to miss the dance.
Yeah.
And it's life. It's life in 3.5 minutes. And if he's often said that if you can take a story, whether you've lived it or you haven't, but if you can take a story and make someone cry, make someone feel, then you have done your job.
Yeah.
As a songwriter, as a performer. And that's what I strive to do. I want to do something that touches someone, whether I've lived in their shoes or not. I want to be able to tell their story in 3.5 minutes set to music. Because when you make someone feel, it blossoms, and more people are going to feel it. More people are going to believe it. More people are going to buy into it. And that's how you organically grow your fan base. So
yes, right. Yeah.
But he was kind of my influencer without knowing it. I've told him that a couple of different times. And he's apologized profusely each time. He says that he's sorry that he's led me down the road of despair and you know, being an artist and being
a struggling artist.
Yeah, starving, but it's got benefits because it's therapy. It becomes your personal therapy. You put that down in words, whether you're a poet, if you're a singer songwriter, the words become your medicine.
Yeah.
No matter if you've suffered a heartbreak or if you're so madly in love with someone, you just got to do something to show it, to tell it.
Yep.
Poetry, songwriting has been that vessel for me.
That's interesting. You know, so you're really talking about alchemy, if you will. You know, you're putting together a mixture of elements, in this case, words and music, to apply a balm to yourself, so to speak. And then once you've shared it with other people, it can have this ripple effect. And in the same way, they were hoping something comes along that creates a ripple effect that shuts down COVID-19, you know. But in the meantime, you know, music itself is so healing, and I've always felt that way. And that, you know, art, when we get into the word art, you know, I find myself either seeing people dividing themselves into being art snobs, are people that sort of turn their nose up at art because they don't get it. But the reality is, I think all art is good art if it's evocative. Whether you like the style or not, whether the painting is primitive, whether the song is not your style of music at all, if it conjures a reaction, I hate that song, it's still an art form, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
You know, whether it's lowbrow or highbrow, you know. And so I think that's what you're doing, is just simply creating art that is evocative and is autobiographical, right? So, you know, we're talking about you as a singer. You're also a songwriter. There's a lot that we could touch on that our listeners would love to hear about you as a songwriter.
Sure. I just want to touch on the fact that you compared it to alchemy, about music being medicine. It is the strongest medicine on the market known to man. There is no alcohol. There is no drug.
I agree.
That is a better cure than a good pen and paper with a poem or a song, because that gets to the root of what you're feeling, whether that's anger. If you are angered by the current political environment, whether you're happy about that. Again, going back to love, loss of love. If you've lost a loved one, sometimes will help if you can write about it. Right? Get those feelings out. I think it's a healthy alternative to medicine. And I'm not saying don't take medicine. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that there are times when you could just sit down, get your words out, and kind of help yourself heal.
Yes. We're just recently, you know, with neurological disorders, discovering the power of music in terms of literally being a medicinal form. You mm-hmm. know, with Alzheimer's, one of the things they've been suggesting is to connect with an Alzheimer family member or friend and play music from a bygone year that they pick, the year that they were a senior in high school, for example, find out what the top songs were, play those songs, and you open a channel to a memory that might bring them back to the present, you know, reality. And it's kind of astounding that we're just discovering this now. And I think there are a lot of discoveries we can make. Talking with Billy Mack, the songwriter, and we'll be right back to talk more about alchemy and the magic of music.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Local Matters, we are back in the studio with Billy Mack, the musician. I'm Louis Matheny, and we've been talking about the alchemy and the power and the healing quality that music has. And I've mentioned to Billy before that my son, who plays oddly around 12 instruments incredibly well, who started with violin at 9 on his own and then just kept going and has recorded several songs that we had hoped he would want to do something with commercially, but he feels like his purpose in life is to take this talent that he's been given by what he considers the divine power and share it with other people. So he created a music therapy program at a refugee center in Singapore for children who are on the spectrum, who have autism and have little to no language skills, and most of them have no English language skills at all. But there's a connectivity that occurs, and something gets unlocked when music is played to them and they listen to it and they have a way of communicating back. So music is also the universal language.
You know? Absolutely.
We take for granted in the United States that most people don't particularly pay attention to the fact that they were taught a foreign language for a reason. And I discovered my reason was it just simply helped with travel. You know, so I happen to be fluent in Spanish. and love music in several languages. But if you don't even know the language, it still has this universal appeal and can be healing, quite literally. And I think that's what you're doing in many ways. You know, when you choose words, for example, in your writing, do you find yourself...
Well, and you touched on something, too, that kind of made me... It spurred a thought of when school systems start talking about cutting funding, music and art...
Oh, boy.
Always the first to go.
Yeah.
And I think that is such... That is such a terrible choice.
Yes.
Not that we should cut athletics. I don't think that we should cut anything. I think to have a well-rounded individual, you should expose your children, give them the opportunity to find their passion, whether that be knocking heads on the football field Friday night, or if they're picking up a guitar or any other instrument and expressing themselves.
Yeah.
I think that is key. And taking that away out of school systems is just a terrible, terrible choice. I know sometimes there's not options, but it just, I hate to see it when that happens, because what happens if we're losing, what if we're shutting down the next James Taylor, the next Elton John of this generation because the school couldn't afford the music program?
Right.
And I know that it's about money. I understand but I wish there was a way around cutting funding to stuff like that.
I don't know when you, what the years would have been that you were in elementary school and in what we call junior high and some people call middle school, but we started every day with the Pledge of Allegiance and singing one of our great songs, the National Anthem, but very often songs by great folk musicians like Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land, you know. My uncle, who was a great lover of nature, had only one song in particular that he wanted played at his funeral, and that was This Is My Father's World. And it spoke to what his belief was, that there's a divine power that created this, and it belongs to him. You know, the earth doesn't belong to us. You know, we belong to it, and that's what he always taught me. So, you know, it's as simple as why not starting the school day idea time. I'm just going to throw one out. Why not ask every student in the classroom to pick a favorite song and it gets sung at some point in over a month's period of time? If you have 20 students, why not 20 songs that you start the day with? You mean starting the day with a song, you know, and see what goes from there. But I'm with you 100% on that. I mean, I think it's essential, and it's, and if we're not making it essential, we are. It really is, quite literally, for those that believe in Christianity as strong as they say they do, it's a sin of omission. You know, we're omitting words and music from our children's lives, and I think that's a terrible loss. So I'm glad to hear you're at least one person that could be counted on to start a movement, maybe.
Well, absolutely. And please, don't, when you're listening out there, don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining to any school administrator. I'm not complaining to teachers, because they're doing what they can. Mm-hmm. But I'm just stating a fact that if we don't offer, if this future generation does not have the chance to find what their passion is, and it could be science, it could be anything. But if we take that away, what happens when we lose the future Janis Joplins, the Kurt Cobains, who was a genius when it comes to lyrics and music? What happens when we lose that because it wasn't offered?
Yep.
So that there's something to be said for that.
You know, and you know that I happen to be a cartoonist and have written a handful of children's books that I've written and or illustrated. And I hosted an exhibit some years ago called Cartoon Limbo, in which we featured rejected cartoon art, and both, you know, all artists, painters, writers, musicians, cartoonists get their work rejected on the way to having something bought and making a living. So I started a group in New York City in the 90s called ASAP, ASAP, Artists Supporting Artists Priorities. Because if you go to art school, there's generally not a business school. And if you're in business school, there's not an art school, you know, at the same university for the most part. Or we're not taught how to tie those together. And artists just have to kind of figure it out. And really, in some ways, COVID-19, again, created an opportunity, not just a plague, for you to think of a way to get your music out there. And I think it's great.
Well, speaking of rejection, if there are artists that are listening to this right now, there's a fella on country radio by the name of Luke Combs, who has had, I can't I can't give you the exact number of consecutive number ones that he's had. He was turned down twice by every label in Nashville because he's a bit on the larger scale. He's a big guy.
Okay.
Got a big beard. And he didn't fit that image.
Yeah.
He was told no.
Yeah.
100 times. Garth Brooks.
Yeah.
They told him to go back to Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he came back, sold boots.
Yeah.
Both of those guys were told no
yep.
so many times, but they were told yes once.
Right.
So don't let somebody rejecting you, as you said, your art.
Yep.
That is your art.
Yep. You know, Billy Mack, who I'm in the studio with today, is talking about something that just ties to art in general. And the rejection process, when I talked about it during the exhibit Cartoon Limbo, was you're actually part of something you're being given. You're in an inner circle of people who have all experienced rejection.
Sure.
And if you resist rejection, I've always said, for the most part in life in general, when bad feelings come along, treat them like a house guest that you weren't expecting. Allow them in, ask them why they're there, spend a little time with them, and then let them know they're free to go when they want to go. But if you resist rejection, you're just going to forever be rejected, you mm-hmm. know, and great artists that have been rejected along the way. Charles Schulz was rejected to the point that he was ready to give up 2 years prior to Peanuts being syndicated. Dr. Seuss, you know, Theodore Geisel had been rejected by 28 publishers, all of whom said there is no way you, as this controversial cartoonist who was in World War One predicting, he had discovered that there were a group of people on their way to creating what would become World War II at some point. Everybody thought the guy was a raving lunatic. So nobody thought he would be a children's book writer and illustrator, if you can imagine that. So
Walt Disney.
You know, it's part of the process. If you're getting rejected, it means you're being seen by some of the greatest, and you should just be thankful that you're in the same room as one of the greatest editors of a magazine or a book there is, you know.
Yeah, being rejected means, you know, that you're working on your finished product. Yeah.
You and I have had this conversation. Years ago, I met a country music, I'm going to say legend, because she really was, for a brief moment in the 90s, a great country music legend, Myla Mason. And how I met her was, a friend had asked to come to New York to live a room with me and get started in New York, but he forgot to tell me at the last minute he was bringing this friend who was going to audition for a off Broadway show about Patsy Cline. And if you know Myla Mason, you know the curly, curly blonde hair that's like Ellie Mae Clampett's that we used to iron on an ironing board as we dyed it brown. And of course, she didn't get the show and went on to be a great country music, you know, a singer, and now is an A&R, and, you know, and I just think one of the greatest songwriters that I know. I'd love to explore your songwriting some more, you know, in addition to your singing. So I hope you'll allow me to have you back in the studio and talk about specific songs and the writing, if we could do that at some point.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
So where do you see yourself after COVID-19 with your music? What's next? Focusing on getting into more local bars, going on a broader level? Do you want to pop up to New York City or Chicago, where I live sometime, and explore the bar scene there?
All that would be great.
Yeah.
I do have a wife and 3 children,
yeah.
Which makes chasing the overall dream of being, you know, this mega star, that was out the window a long time ago. But telling, you know, writing songs and telling stories,
yeah,
is kind of where I'm at.
How old are you, may I ask?
43.
43. Interesting. I chose at 40 to dive out of the fitness industry, where I was having an enormously successful career that I had not expected to have. At 30, I'd kind of said to myself, well, I've had some great shows off Broadway. I've had 3 or 4 national commercials, and doesn't seem to be going any further. So I guess, you know, the dream is out the window, the star is out the window. And yet, you know, I'm hoping that you allow for the fact that people like Lucinda Williams didn't really get going until she was in her 50s, you
right.
know, and we're talking about you, the musician, but we've got this person named Cherie, the wife, who I didn't know was the wife when I saw you. So the two of you together happen to be this duo as well, right? As musicians.
Yeah. We
you're dynamic together. It's just astounding.
Yeah. She's the real talent in the family.
Okay.
I'm just the one that gets to put my name on the billboard, I guess, or the marquee or whatever it is, but she's the real talent in the family. She could sing with anybody and make them sound 1,000 times better.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She's the one that really deserves the spotlight.
Yeah.
And she can do anything.
Yeah.
So she's the one that's that is the nucleus, I think, of what what I'm being able to do.
I have to say, I think this is part one of an interview with Billy Mack, the musician, here on Local Matters. I'm Louis Matheny, and Billy, I hope you'll come back and talk some more and just pick up where we left off. And I think our listeners have enjoyed this as much as I have, and we'll see a part two at some point. Would you agree to that?
Sounds good.
All right. See you again soon.